is actually a little bit about last year, but it's a Tuesday session. But also this year, particular speaker today that you're going to have is saying, I'm not the only one in the basic text. He's also in the basic text. Oh, you're not? You don't know. This might be your first opportunity. It may be the only opportunity to have someone that shared some years of recovery that, once again, that you came to the convention not anticipating this happening, and once again, you find a person that some of the material that you knew, some of the things that you being presented today coming to this particular gentleman. He tracked me down some time ago and asked me to be his sponsor. And, you know, and I got a chance to know him, I got a chance to meet him, I got a chance to spend some time with him, and we cut old touches and told old tales and lied to each other and all the things that we do. And just, you know, test him out and check his sound, he's in the right place, you know. Or how we test people. But he withstood the test. And part of the thing is he withstood the test of time, and had some difficulties in his life in terms of this journey that we're on. And at this time, you know, I'd like to present him with his coin, his clean time coin, and let him, you know, get on with giving you the message of recovery.
Thank you.
Because that's what it's about. And I'd like to present this to you with my heartfelt warmth, and you may be able to do it over and over again. And I can do it over and over again, hopefully. Thank you.
Look around you.
folks up shaking and doing all that stuff, and I'm just sitting there, you know. And they're smiling and they're hugging one another, and they still got their pants on. And I think that's great. I'm going to talk, I made this talk 2,000 or 3,000 times, so I decided I wasn't going to talk. And I tried to talk to this high power that I have to rely on when I'm in a pinch. And he gave me two words, dark and light. And I existed in the dark for about 42 years. And I mean existed. I don't know why I was the way that I was, but Big Bill just never did like Little Bill. And I was that way as far back as I can remember. I did a full step on it. I couldn't understand that. I saw people that were, that I wanted to be like. I never was the best looking in the class, wasn't the smartest, wasn't the best athlete. I never came up to the expectations of what I thought I ought to be. All this great thing going on between these ears got me in a lot of trouble over a lot of years. I don't know about you, but it's always been that way. I'm not going to dwell on the darkness alone, because I don't mind. And I can still get there by sitting down and guess what? Thank you. I don't know why I'm that way. But this program's taught me some things that I never knew. I had some people that read a story that I wrote one time that I went to school with, and they said, Bill, we never knew you were like that. And it was because I could put up such a good front. Laughing over the pain that was inside of me. And I'm sure you understand that. But when I had my first drug, this was in the mid-40s, right after Columbus came over. And I'll never forget it, because it made reality something that I could exist in. And I didn't continue to use from that moment on, but approximately 7 years later, I started using, and I did not, I had something cruising around in me until I was 42 years old, all the time. And I'd like to say now that I know God looks after us. I'm married to a lady. She ran me off for a little while. I got better. If she and I are still breathing the 12th day of October, we'll be married 50 years. I love her dearly. I've got a wonderful family. They are here. This is the first time they've ever heard me talk. And I've got a little bit of a time frame to worry about, so I'm going to get on with this pretty quick. I want to let you know something. Standing here this week, sitting in my wheelchair, I watched a whole lot of folks see each other, smile and run towards each other and hug. And I'm going to tell you something. That lets me know that our Creator, all our Creator, is in this thing to help us. And He's the answer and the solution to that problem that lies within me. Because that problem's an inside job. And it can only be fixed from the inside. No doctor or some idiot can open me up. All I have to do is ask. I don't know if any of you people have worked on lit literature, any of the lit kind of our NA literature, but I'm going to tell you, I spent over 20 years in treatment centers as a counselor, because see what happened? I got about 4 years clean. I became one of those counselors that, you know, I'm going to cure all these folks. And I went to all these classes, and I got all this valuable information. It wasn't worth a dime. I learned, you know, I had 23 shrinks. I don't know how, when I went to treatment, they didn't have treatment. They put you in nut houses. See, over in Alabama over there, we had a, they had a word, we didn't have addiction over there. Everybody was an alcoholic over there. And so they put you in as an alcoholic. And they had a cure for that. It's called drug addiction. That was back in the 60s and the early 70s before I got clean. And you came out of there with all these scripts, you know. And you didn't have anything to work on your insides with. Just something you could use to prolong the agony. And I pursued this thing until I finally discovered that the answer to recovery is a higher power. And that's where these steps take. And I can tell you this from my own experience, that working these steps and practicing these principles gives you somebody to love, and people that love you. I've had a lot of illness since December of last year. And I've had people calling me, not just calling me out of concern. And I know what the line is. That's God in your heart. And there's a lot of line here. And like I said, standing here 20-some years later, after being here before, I know that makes this some of your first world convention. Don't miss a minute of it. You can't stay here long enough. Because I always remember my first one. I remember I ran around with my mouth wide open. I didn't know there's that many drug addicts in the world. And I heard one of the things that really amazed me was I heard that 27 people from California drove to Atlanta, Georgia to attend that convention. That's amazing. I thought, they must be crazy, isn't it? You know, the second step in this program talks about we could be restored to sin. Don't say we will. Said we could be. Now then, I had 23 different psychiatrist, wig pickers, shrinks, whatever you want to call them. They picked my wig. And most of them diagnosed me, you know, you can get certified. They said something about me being paranoid, schizophrenic, manic, depressive, with an inadequate personality. Paranoid schizophrenia didn't worry me. Manic depressive didn't worry me. But an inadequate personality, what in the hell does that mean? I thought about that a lot. Asked two or three, and they finally told me just that I had some problems with being normal, whatever normal is. And has anybody ever said to you, you're somebody else? What the hell does that mean? It's not clearly defined. They said, you're an SOB, I understand that. Easier of breaking the law. I understand that. I always had my biggest problems in life were people that were in authority. Because you see, I had a problem. I have selective thinking. I have selective hearing. I have selective doing. I did what I wanted to do. I heard what I wanted to hear. And I thought what I wanted to think. And that didn't seem to fit in society too well. Because there were a lot of people like principals and teachers and law enforcement folks, judges and policemen, that didn't seem to think that I needed to be out for the rest of the folks. They were the ones I had the biggest problem with. By the grace of God, I hadn't been locked up since I came around to this program. And that's a pretty good rate, because I used to pay regular visits. People say to me, why do you hang around those folks? And I said, my best friends are jailbirds. bad chase skirts, have a commingling of acid problem. You know what that is? Stairs. And I like those people because, see, you gave me someplace to be a part of. I could go with you, and I was a part of it. I didn't have to use dope. Thank God to learn about it tonight. Some of you heard Ed talk last night. He talked a lot about sponsorship. And if you're here with a sponsor, please get you one. I had to call mine on the phone because he lives in L.A. And that's okay. At least I hadn't had too many problems other than physical lately. And I hadn't bothered him too much. But I tell you what, something comes up, you're going to hear about it. Because that's something I've learned to do. I've had to... I've been periods of time I didn't have a sponsor. And it's sad when they die on you. I had four that died. And I was complaining about that one day. And, one of my sponsors was in half, I was beginning to think that everybody I asked to be my sponsor died. And I was concerned about asking somebody else. And he said, go in there and look in the mirror, Bill. I said, you're 67 years old. That was 2 years ago. He said, you can't outlive everybody, and they can't outlive you. So I got one that's older than I am. I figured I'm not going to have any effect on him. So. But, you know, we all got sponsored. And we all united in the spirit. And I'll tell you just a little bit about it. I was given every... my life, I've had every chance to become what they call a productive member of society from the get-go. I was went to church all the time. I was in the Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, you know, trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, and brave. Wish I'd have followed some of that. And I was taught some things that I know today aren't true. I was taught about the color of your skin. You might be a little bit better than somebody else. What you had made you a little bit better than somebody else. Who you ran around with made you a little bit better than somebody else. And I've had it all, from the country club to the alleys. I didn't stop in the streets. I went to the alleys. And I'm going to tell you something. Those folks in the alleys, God loves them just as much as he does those at the country club. But I've been fortunate enough to sponsor some people. And lucky enough, I was talking to a guy the other day. I told him I had a sponsor that lived out in California. He says, who is it? Well, you know him. I said, Bob Beck. Yeah, I know him. He said, aren't you from Alabama, Bill? I said, yeah. He said, you know Bob's black, don't you? I said, hell yes, I know he's black. I said, I sponsor a couple of black guys, and those dudes work the steps and practice principles as good as anybody I got. I said, maybe you ought to get you a black. I gotta tell you a story. I like to tell stories. I ain't much of a talker. I speak, I'm a talker. And this is about jobs come and go. And this is a true story because it happened to me. And in the mid-60s, I'm still using, and I remember I had my son down, and we were getting a haircut. I couldn't buy a job where I lived. There was nobody want me to work on. And I was walking down the street in the main drag there in Decatur. Heard somebody holler my name. I ain't been in the medical field for a while. I was personated in the hospital, had the narcotics stamp. And I knew how to fill scripts. license to do that. A lot of the pharmacists there in Decatur got upset with him about that. So this guy's name was Freddy, and he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, nothing. I'm looking for a job." And he said, "I got a job for you." "Doing what?" He said, "Hemming me out at my drugstore." Now, this was a small drugstore. And I began to think, you know how well. I began to think this ought to be a pretty good deal. So I told him, asked him, negotiated there, and he offered me a salary. And he said, "When can you go to work?" And I said, "Well, how about noon today?" This was kind of lowered the house on, you know what. And he said, "Well, come on down." He said, "I got a guy that's going to be leaving tomorrow. This is going to work out great." I went down, and they kind of showed me the ropes for a couple of hours. And this guy, I stayed in his place. He says, "Well, you can do this, no problem. You've already know how to mostly track company names on these drugs." So he takes off, and I'm there. Fred says to me, he said, I need to be gone a couple of hours. Cater was dry at that time. He took off. I didn't know where he was going. He was the boss, you know. So I was hanging around there, wasn't in business much. About 2 hours later, he comes back in. He's got a carload of whiskey. Whole case. Well, I don't know the carload of maybe anything more than one bottle of carload. He says, he goes over and gets him a bottle of Darnum and him from Forrest. He says, "I'm going to go home and rest for a week or two." That's kind of strange. And I said, "Well, can I get in touch with you?" And he just lived straight down the same street. So he said, "Yeah, just call me anytime. I'd be glad to run down here." That's the last I saw him for 6 weeks. But he says, "Now listen, I got you a delivery boy coming in tomorrow. And you won't have to deliver any of this stuff." And so next morning I opened up. Guy comes in dressed in a suit. Coat, tie on, hat. He's in his late 50s, maybe early 60s. And he puts this script up there. And stamped on the script, big red letters, it says, "Certified Drug Addict." And I picked it up and said, "Where'd you get that?" He says, "Well, I go to the appropriate judge's office every week, and they give me one." I thought, "Well, hell, I might have one, though." So it was for K-4s, you know, in the lobby. And I filled that form, and he said, "I need to borrow your restroom." So he went back and rigged up and come out and tossed his hat over in his coat and says, "I'm your delivery boy." So the owner, I'd had already had me a few pills that morning, and I thought about calling Fred, and gave him a call, and he couldn't talk about the delivery boy. And I thought to myself, well, the owner's home loaded, and I'm here loaded, and the delivery boy's loaded. We got enough time drugs going. Some 5 1/2 weeks after that, somebody called me and gave me the word that there was a division of the U.S. Treasury Department in town looking for me. Narcotics division. I locked the door, dropped the keys off of Fred's house, and kind of disappeared. Nothing ever came of that. One way to escape. But every, what I want to bring up was, every Saturday, there's a little dude named George who had a contract cleaning majority of the office down that downtown area. And he'd come in there, and we'd be playing cards, gambling in the back, or we didn't have any customers or anything. And he just, he's a little bitty dude. Had soft, real white hair. And George was a man of color. And he'd just look at us gambling, he'd go over and clean his floor and just shake his head. And some 15 years later, we just started Narcotics Anonymous in 1978 in Decatur. It's two girls and myself went there. I kind of like those odds. And look too bad. And one girl came 3 or 4 weeks, you know, happy as they left. And then this other, Rosemary, she stayed a while. Thank you, she died over here in Atlanta with her grandkids, clean. She was in the house that time she left. And nobody came to the meetings. And I sat there and read the white book. But there was somebody that come down the hall pushing a mop in a room. His name was George. And he peeked in the window and see nobody, and then he'd come in, sit down and talk to me, because he remembered me from the drugstore. And nobody could have forgotten. And George told me about himself. And I want to share his story with you, because it's basically what I'm talking about here today. He said his folks came over, they were slaves at one time after the Civil War, and they built them a home over in a forest, a national forest, about 20 miles from where I lived. And they made liquor over that area. And he said from the time that he could walk, he was drunk. And one day under a tree, out there in the forest, he begged God to help him get straight. And he got straight, and he found him a job in a little town not far from there. And he said, I walked for a while, Bill. And finally got enough money, bought me a little bicycle. He said, I used to ride by this nursery every day on the way home. And there'd be little plants, shrubs, and bushes that they'd thrown away. They looked like they were dying. He'd take them home and repot them and get them going. And there were a lot of churches out there. And they were for white people only. And you know, you've seen these nights when it was just like twilight, when you could just almost see. Don't say those nights would come along, and he'd take, go out and dig some little holes by these churches. And he'd plant these shrubs, and he'd water them at night. And the people couldn't understand why the places began to look so much better. And about, he said it took them about 3 years, and they caught it. Now this man, when he was telling me this, had not had any of the drug alcohol for 33 years. And that's why he always kept my interest. And he said, here came the board of stewards, the different ones, deacons of different churches, and invited him and his family to come to church after they called him. And he told me, he said, the great thing, he said, we enjoyed going to church till we moved to Decatur. He said, the great thing about this, Bill, he says, I no longer had to work in the dark. I could work in the light. That's why I'm telling you here today. You know, the light's human. And it's everywhere. All we have to do is be spiritually fit to see. And when I see folks running each other and hadn't seen each other since maybe some convention somewhere and they hug, and I'm glad to say it's a wonderful place to be able to see the light. But like I told you, you know, I was always worried about where I was in my program. You ever worried about that? Say some cool guy out there somewhere. Man, I'd like to be like it. I told that to Jimmy Kenner one night. He said, you don't want what they got, you want what God's got for you. And so I told, like I told you, I got into all this counseling paraphernalia. And I kind of burned out there for a while. Took me about a year back in steps and practicing the principles. Got to get straightened out. It wasn't that I got so well informed that I knew everything. It was, I just, you know, I didn't care about anybody. I was messing with addicts and alcoholics all day long. Go home tonight. Well, I don't need to go to me. Well, you know what happens there? Man, you get sicker than it. You get that one thing. You know, it gets to going, playing records for you. And you get to dancing to the music and don't know the step, you know? And then, wrong with a man is looking at the truth. And, you know, I used to see somebody do something, I'd think, well, hang on, I need to straighten them out. I need to learn to accept folks where they are. You know, if they ask me, I'm going to tell them. That may not be true. May not be right. I always, you know, first 9 years I just kind of wandered around, worked some steps, tried to practice some principles. And I didn't really know what was going on. Somewhere in the second 5 years, I figured out the first 5 years, my head was in my ass. The third 5 years, I figured out that it was okay for it to be there. The fourth 5 years, I finally figured out that I was going to put it back in there every now and then. The fifth 5 years, I said something about more will be revealed. And what it was when I found out the answer to the question changed. And time moves on and it moves fast. And all I can say, you know, I ain't got a few more minutes, but I got a couple of things. You ever seen somebody come in meeting for the first time? And just give it around, man. Yeah. Just to make me smile tonight, because it took me a long time to get here. I didn't just jump in here and get a little bit of time. I had to experiment. I went to another fellowship. I didn't have Narcotics Anonymous around. And for those of you that have got narcotics started in your ears, God bless you. Because it's rough. This little dude comes in, little bitty guy, you know, and he's got this big smile on his face. And I was fraudulent as heck. I had this little old Volkswagen, you know. By the time everybody in that group, it wasn't the seventh, it was a recovery group, seven people. And there's one lady in there, real dignified. She was a lawyer's wife. And she wore her hair all up on her head. Nice little lady. They drew straws, and I think she lost. And she became my sponsor for a while. And then this lady had a problem. She called me bad names. She indicated from time to time that my mother and daddy had never been married. And she had an entourage, one or two girls that she was trying to help get straight. She told me to stay away from her. Don't even say anything to her. You can come over to the house when we're studying this book and sit at the far end of the table. But don't you speak to them, you talk to me. I thought. She says, in all indications, you leave all skirts alone. I didn't want to do that. You don't go to clubs, I didn't want to do that. I want to do a little bit of all of it, you know, see how much I can stand. And that was my downfall, because I just didn't do what I was told to do. But this little dude comes in there, and I'm talking every week. I got some big dilemma. You know, all my time, I got checks bouncing everywhere. If I just could get that straightened out, I probably won't be at the next meeting, probably be in jail. And he come up after me, and he says, well, just call me sponsor, read the book. Go to meetings, don't pick it up, you'll be all right. Next meeting I'd say something about, well, you know, my family's hitting me out, and I'm sleeping on a car, and I'm not getting to eat regularly. I was doing well, you know. The car was bad. And he come up and say, well, just call me sponsor. Read the book, go to meetings, don't use, you know. And I come up with something else, here you come. Telling me the same thing. Never changed. The same thing over and over. That happened all in early 1976. And I was trying to come off the drugs. I finally got off of them on March 15th, 1976. He made a comment after the meeting one day. He says, you're doing good. You're not using those old pills and things. And you're coming to meetings and it's the way you talk. You know, you seem to be doing okay. I said, I got to looking so good to me. I just invited me out for another year. Lasted 2 days. And the 1st of May, 1976, rolled around, and that's it. God relieved that. Sitting laying in the back of the car. I told him, I'm going to try his way. See if he can show me how. And that's what you do. I don't know to this day how he does all that. But he does it through people like you. You've got something to share with somebody. Every one of you's got something to share that God needs you. I know one thing, you keep coming back, I don't get back. I assure you of that. And I'm going to shut her down here in just a minute, but I want to tell you this, that I need this program more today than I did when I got here. I know that. This is the last little story I got for you, but it's a good little boy named Johnny. School every day. Went down the hill, right straight into the school yard, about a block and a half away, and his mama watching that big window in her kitchen. And he was kind of a shy boy. Didn't seem to have any friends or anything. She watched him go every morning and come every afternoon. And all the other kids would be running up and down, playing, talking to each other, coming up the street and going out. And one day he came in and he said they didn't have much money. She said to him, he said to her, says, Mama, I'd like you to help me do something. She said, what is it? He said, well, it's getting close to Valentine's Day. And I'd like you to help me make some Valentine's for my classmates. She thought it was kind of strange, but went ahead and I got them all ready. They came, he took them to school. She was watching, she thought she made some cookies. He always said, take them, drink some milk, and get them all from school. She saw him coming. And saw all these other kids running and showing each other their Valentines. And he was coming up the street by himself. He came in, she noticed that he didn't have any. He didn't put anything down on the table. He sat down and she gave him his milk cookies. And she heard him say something. She says, what did you say? And he said, this has been the greatest day of my life. And she says, what do you mean? This has been the greatest day of your life. He said, I got to tell all my classmates how much I love them. And that's the way it is here, 4th of July, 2002. This old drug addict gets to tell his classmates how much he loves them. Told me, call your sponsor. Don't mean to read the book. Don't pick up. God bless.